Hello, McLean Johnson here. Welcome to a special edition of the Sunday Jam podcast. On this episode, I'm featuring an interview with piano player Josh Charles, who was born and raised in Kansas City, Missouri, my hometown, and he currently resides in New York. And Josh has been influenced by the many great New Orleans piano players, including James Booker, and he is also good friends with Dr. John. And Josh recently released a single entitled Healing Time, with all the proceeds benefiting the Preservation Resource Center of New Orleans. And the PRC is all about preserving the architecture and the history and culture of New Orleans and helping to rebuild homes devastated by Hurricane Katrina. And they've been active since 1974. And so this is a great way to give back to New Orleans. For more info on Josh and to download the single, please check out joshcharlesmusic.com.
You're from KC, so what's your favorite barbecue restaurant and why?
I'm gonna say Jack Stack.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna say Jack Stack. I just like not even the one in Martin City, but the one on 91st and Metcalf. I think when I was a kid, I used to go to like Arthur Bryant's and things like that. But mm-hmm. I think for my preference for ribs is definitely is Jack Stack.
Where'd you go to high school?
Blue Valley North.
When did you first start playing the piano?
I mean, I was really young. I was about 8 years old when I started.
Mm-hmm.
My parents used to play Motown in the house
because mm-hmm.
they were from Detroit, and you know, I heard everything. I was into rock music. I mean, I just mm-hmm. I started piano lessons like most people play. You know, most people start piano lessons. I just was very lucky to be fortunate enough to be good at it and started to excel. But I mean, I was studying classical piano, but I always wanted to play guitar, listening to rock music.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was about, I don't know, 12, 13 years old is when I was listening to Lizzie Shannon's show on a blues radio show on the radio mm-hmm. in Kansas City, and you have New Orleans Piano Hour one day, and mm-hmm. that just totally flipped me out. So that's when I started getting into that kind of music, learning how to play it.
You really started getting into the New Orleans style of playing, and who was the first New Orleans piano player that you really admired?
I mean, James Booker.
Yeah, Booker's a beast. Yeah,
still my hero.
You learned under Dr. John, and how'd you first meet the doctor?
Well, my parents took me to visit New Orleans when I was a kid, and one time I was there, I was just about that age. I was about 14 or 15. Mac was doing a show, and I didn't even know he didn't live there. I just assumed he lived there,
right?
Because you know he's from New Orleans. But he was there for a record release party.
Okay.
And I went to the show. My parents let me go to the show, and then I introduced myself to his road manager and mm-hmm. told her that I was getting a little, you know, I was known for playing Booker stuff, and I wanted to meet Mac. And
mm-hmm.
he's like, "Wow, I don't know how you know how James Booker is." And I, yeah, and so I met Mac, and I didn't get to play for him that time, but, you know, I definitely hit it off with him. He saw a lot of me and him when he was a kid because mm-hmm. he started really, really young, and he was a hustler, and
mm-hmm.
he said to me that, you know, he really, without using his accent, you know, that he really respected me trying to learn the game. And when I moved to New York for college, you know, I just used to follow him around and hang out with him wherever I could, any chance I could.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I had pretty much, like, learned his style.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, it was never a situation where I would learn from him like a teacher, but essentially I felt like he taught me more than anything anybody else ever did about music in that sense. He used to let me sit behind him while he played
mm-hmm.
so I could watch his hand. But, yeah, I mean, he was very fortunate in my life to have a relationship with him, to know him, to have recorded with the guys in his band, to just be associated with him in any way, mm-hmm. shape, or form. He's an absolute amazing legend, and he cares tremendously about the music.
It's amazing the way that you can walk up and, you know, meet Dr. John, and then that just starts you on this whole thing, you know?
That's exactly what happened. I mean, I was in New Orleans when I had all these experiences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the first time I was there, I got to sit in with Charmaine Neville. And, you know, just because I asked. I wasn't afraid to ask anybody. Mm-hmm. And then when I was in New York, all the artists used to come through the city and play the clubs here. And so I was fortunate. I did the same thing with Johnny Adams and Cyril Neville and the Meters and the Nevilles. And, I mean, just anybody, Walter Wolfman, you name it, I asked to play.
What have you gained from playing with such a diverse amount of artists?
Well, I think the only way to really play the music properly, having not grown up there, is to have immersed yourself in it and played with the people who made it, who really made it, you know, who made the music what it was. That way you know, whenever you play with somebody who plays better than you, makes you rise up your game, raise up your game. So, I mean, you know, every time I get to play, I just finished the tour with Cyril Neville and, you know, playing with, I opened for him and then I got to sit in half the show with him and, you know, just getting to play with guys like that, you know, you obviously have proven yourself, I've worked really hard that I can cut it, you know?
Yeah.
It's always fun, man. I every time I'm around those guys, you know, it's a thrill for me. It's an honor. You know, I sit there and I'm telling Cyril that I sat in with him when I was a kid and now I'm opening for him, and now I'm playing with him.
That has to be really good for you in terms of your skills, because it just keeps pushing you further and further.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't play as much New Orleans piano as much as I used to, because I write and sing my own songs, and they definitely have all that in it. I mean, anybody listening to my music can hear it.
Right.
But I don't, you know, I used to just kind of like immerse myself in it to the point where I learned everything I could, and now I kind of focus more on the way I play, which is a combination, a gumbo of all the artists that I've ever listened to. You know, I have a lot of Mackie May, a lot of Booker, a lot of Fest, a lot of Donny Hathaway, Billy Preston. I mean, you know, I just whatever I've assimilated to eventually created my own thing. But if somebody says, hey, can you play some Booker stuff, yeah, I will. I played the same music when I was 20, but it just didn't sound the same. It didn't have the same thing. It just didn't have living in it, you know? And now I can listen to my stuff when I was 20 and be like, wow, okay, I could still play. I could play that music, but it's just not the same thing. Singing it and playing it and writing it, different altogether. One of the things Mac always told me was, you know, just stay true to yourself and stay true to your heart and don't listen to anybody else. I mean, those are words that I've followed for a long, long time.
You were saying earlier you just toured with Cyril Neville, and do you have a favorite memory from that tour?
Yeah, we were in Breckenridge, Colorado, 11,000 feet up. It basically impossible to breathe. That was quite a memory. just trying to play, you know, let alone sing. Trying to play was impossible, and trying to sing was impossible beyond belief. But it was my first time that he had, the first show where I got to sit in with the band. I had a great time with it, you know. I think the highlight, though, was definitely the last show we just did in Sellersville, Pennsylvania, because we were on a lower altitude.
Right, see, that's much better, yeah.
But yeah, 11,000 feet up. I mean, I used to visit Colorado and used to go to, you know, music camp and all that stuff when I was a kid, but it had been like 15 years since I've been in the mountains, and I also had a cold, so when I got there, I was miserable.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was tough. It was a tough little thing, but I'm going out with Buckwheat Zydeco, who I just saw the other night. I've never met. I just met him the other night. I'm excited about that because he's, you know, he's an awesome showman and just killer what he does. But puts on a great show, so I'm looking forward to opening for him. And I'm working on trying to get some Neville Brothers shows.
How did you choose what charity you wanted to support with the release of your single? Like, how'd you choose?
Well, the thing with the Healing Time was, you know, I wrote the song a couple of years ago and then never released it. I wrote it after Katrina, right after Katrina. But what happened was I didn't put it out. And then I sat down with my manager who had asked me, you know, what I care about more than anything, and I said, New Orleans. And I said, oh, and by the way, you know, I have this song that I never put out, and it's just perfect. I'd love to be able to do something for New Orleans. And she said, well, is there charities as well? Yeah, you know, there's so many charities.
Right.
So I just started doing my research, and we had some help. A friend of mine introduced me to the Preservation Resource Center, and I was so impressed because they've been around a real long time, 35 years, And they also, since Katrina, have rebuilt nearly 200 homes and businesses in the greenest possible way. So I was blown away by that because they were really just making things happen. You know, it was getting done. Then there was a lot of talk about how a lot of charities were just like kind of sitting there, you know, taking money, but it wasn't happening. And so, I mean, I was like really touched by the fact that, plus I really love the fact that they were doing it the greenest possible way, and they were they were keeping the architectural integrity of what makes New Orleans so beautiful. So I said to them, you know, listen, I have the song, and I'd love to be able to give you the song, the money that I raised from the song, so that it will help rebuild the city. And they weren't, they're working all over the city. They're not just working in the Ninth Ward,
right,
and Holy Cross and Treme and Broadmoor and Uptown and all over the city. And so, and that's how it started. And they've been really great and very supportive. I'm definitely very excited by that. I want to, you know, and then I said to them, I want to raise, my goal is to raise $1 million for the charity by the anniversary of Katrina or within a month after that, because, I mean, it's going to be in the public eye again.
Right.
So that's, you know, that's where we were at. We went down to New Orleans in February, started our little tour, and we met them, and just a great bunch of folks. And so I'm honored to represent them and be able to donate, give, and raise money for them. I mean, that's our goal.
Well, it's so great that you're trying to make a positive impact. It's great that you can give back to something that you care so much about.
Well, and then, you know, people ask me because, you know, I live in New York.
Right.
But when I tried to live in New Orleans, which was, you know, right before Katrina, and I was forced out, I've been back there several times since the storm. And I was just, I mean, it astounds me. I mean, I'm a musician. That city has given me so much as an artist. This is a small way for me to give back. It's turned into a major thing. I mean, it's turned into a national awareness and things like that. But, you know, it's still a grassroots thing. We've got no record label behind it. We've got no money behind it. So for people to go out and actually download the song, you know, it's taking, you know, we're trying to take this viral, basically, because it is a digital song. There's no hard copy of it.
Right.
And so it's a lot of just, you know, hustling and just getting people excited about it. And I've been very fortunate and lately to get some really important people behind it. And I'm hoping that we really start seeing these donations come in. And yeah, you can get more than a dollar, but my concept that we created was that it was just 99 cents, you know? Everybody can give a dollar. There's millions of people that can give a dollar, and we can raise the money. So it's kind of a really unique way of doing things, and I'm very excited about just, you know, trying to get the whole social media community involved, which has been, you know, nothing's easy. I have a song called It Ain't Easy, and that's exactly what it is. But, you know, I think it's worth it because if we can raise this money, $1 million is going to go a long, long way to help rebuild the city. And people ask me, well, why are you working on New Orleans? I'm like, yeah, man, you just don't realize. Half the people are gone, and there's still so much damage and destruction and devastation there that, you know, it's my donation is nothing. You know, they need, you know, hundreds of, you know, billions of dollars.
It amazes me that people would even ask you that. Isn't that almost ridiculous?
The thing is they haven't seen or heard about it for 4 years. So the thing is that it'll be on their minds again in this month, in August and September, when it becomes apparent again, when they start showing the pictures again. Like my little CNN story showed, you know, pictures of steps going up to nothing, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, if you were watching CNN that day, you might have been moved enough to give me a dollar to help raise the song, you know, to buy the song. But I don't make any money from it. I mean, I've been very fortunate because it's certainly propelling me as an artist with my other music. People are interested once they find out about what I'm doing that they, hey, you got a record out. Oh, man, we'll come see you play live. I mean, you know, whatever. Those things are I'm an artist, so obviously I'm trying to survive as an artist.
But, I mean, that's just a separate benefit from the single.
Exactly. I mean, that's why the song is not on the record. My EP that came out last year did not have Healing Time on it for a reason, which was that we couldn't separate the money. If I sold my EP, I can separate how to give the money back to charity. Even if we raise $1 million or $10 million or $20 million, it's going to be going to the Preservation Resource Center. The downloads from the song are going to the Preservation Resource Center. So, you know, I've given the song away. But, you know, the thing is that I've been praised and all this stuff about it, but, you know, I don't, it's not a, to me, it's, look, it's a song I wrote. I think it's perfect for the situation. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to donate it. But it takes the people around me to really make the difference.
Mm-hmm.
I might have given him the ammunition.
Sure.
But now I need the people leading in style to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because
right.
That's the problem. So here's a song. I'm giving you the song. But now we got to make everybody mm-hmm. download it. And the goal is, you know, that they like the song, so they would download it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And this week we're number 29 at radio in the country for top 40 AC.
So that's great.
It's working. Mm-hmm. It's working, but actually, you know, Kansas City was asking me, are they playing it on KUDL? Because that would be the one station that would play it. So I know people have been calling in KUDL, and hopefully they'll start playing it.
It's great that you're having that sort of response nationally for something that is so grassroots.
Yeah, I've had the national response, but now we're really going after the social media aspect mm-hmm. of it, because if somebody's sitting in front of the computer and they're moved by the story and they're moved by the song, then they need to click on that button and download mm-hmm. the song. You know, we were going after all the big TV shows and things like that. Uh-huh. We're still in talks with some major network TV shows, but that's not going to make people download the song.
No.
It's got to go viral, and taking it viral is a real challenge. And, it is not new that Katrina happened.
Right.
What's new is that we're trying to do something virally that hasn't been done before, which is raise $1 million, a dollar at a time, with a social media and a social good campaign. And so, you know, I played this event the other day. I went to this Mashable.com, who now are trying to get on board. And, I mean, a lot of people are really, once they find out about it, they get real excited.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that question of, you know, how do you get them to find out about it?
Right.
And how do you keep them to care about it? How do you get them to care about it? So... Mm-hmm. It's really exciting for me, but I'm not going to get too excited until I, you know, see the money.
Right.
For the charity, because so many people have invested their time, their money, their own, you know, ability to do things, and I want to be on tour as much as possible as an artist and as well to promote my cause.
Right.
Because once people come see me play and then they want to download the song, so that's the most important thing for me right now, is to be on the road. I've got some records in the can. I'm working on, mm-hmm. I have a live EP that I just recorded a few days ago. It's mm-hmm. going to be coming out. My new record, which is a lot of re-recorded versions of my EP along with new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
My full record will be coming out this fall.
All right.
And I just had a concert that went up for sale on Wolfgang's Vault this week.
Nice. Okay, great.
Which is a live record when I was playing with a band last year, because right now I'm just touring by myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really excited about that Wolfgang's Vault put up this concert of mine. So musically, you know, people get to see what I do with the music, because, I mean, my story is a news item, and I want people to see that side of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what I am, as a musician, so... the activist role and the all that is cool. I'm happy to do that because a lot of people are doing it. The thing mm-hmm. is without a name behind you, like I'm sort of a grassroots guy who people are starting to hear about and starting to know who are they. Hey, Josh Charles, I think I heard of that guy. I might have heard of that guy.
That was Josh Charles, and I'm McLean Johnson, and this has been the Sunday Jam Podcast. To download past episodes, comment on the show, or subscribe to the podcast, please check out sundayjam.podomatic.com.